You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everybody. We begin today with the G8 summit of world leaders of the eight richest countries just underway in Japan today. And who can forget, thinking back over the last 8 years, all the great G8 summit moments for President George W. Bush. There was the Merkel hug. There was getting to know Vladimir Putin well enough to call him Pootie.
Who could forget that?
Oh, yes. An era is ending as George W. Bush is at his last group of eight or G8 summit. It's being held at a remote mountaintop resort in Japan. The leaders from the U.S., Japan, Britain, Germany, France, Italy, Canada, and Russia are in attendance. But the Bush goodbye and all the head of state handshakes are hardly the headline today. In the grips of global inflation, the eight richest nations are getting better acquainted with five growing economic dynamos who represent nearly 3 billion people and someday just might hold the center of mass in the global economy as well. Joining us from the press center in Hokkaido, Japan, is Bridget Kendall, BBC diplomatic correspondent. Bridget, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be with you.
What do you make of this G8 versus the G5? The discussions that are going on certainly have to do with the G8's agenda, but there's also this growing concern of these five other economic dynamos, China, Brazil, South Africa, Mexico. And how is that figuring into this summit?
Well, that's right. And in fact, it's not just the G5, but today they've also been giving outreach to seven African leaders, because the discussions that have been going on today are about poverty and aid in Africa. And those hikes in gas prices and food prices, which have hit the world's poorest, and Africa above all. So it's not just thinking about all the other big, powerful economies that make up the global economy that the G8 leaders these days have to think about. It's all the have-nots who don't have what the rich nations have, but in order to ensure that there is stability and prosperity and that the world works in an even way, these days, every year, G8 leaders spend as much time thinking about poverty as they do thinking about their own rich economies.
Well, Bridget, with these kinds of issues on the agenda, poverty and, of course, climate change and questions of politics in Zimbabwe, is it the case that a G8 summit is somewhat obsolete because the nations that are talking about these issues are not the nations that represent the billions of people who are most affected by some of these problems?
Well, you know, that's a very good point. It's not a bad year to remember why the G8, well, it used to be the G7, was created. It was after the OPEC oil crisis in the 1970s, when these rich nations, mostly consumers of oil, wanted to get together to coordinate their policies economically worldwide. Well, here we have another oil crisis this year with high price rises, but they can't sort it out on their own. They need everyone else to be on board as well. And that's where you get the problem, because it was hard enough to get agreement when you just had seven countries. But when you've got these other big giants, particularly China and India, coming along, it's much harder to get agreement. And it's going to be Wednesday when they focus particularly on climate change. But we can already see that there's a kind of divide. There are the big industrialized economies that for years have been using a lot of energy. The United States, of course, the biggest gas guzzler of them all. And then on the other side, you have the new emerging economies like China and India. And their argument is, look, we don't think there should be an even playing field with us. We're just beginning here. We need to keep emerging and we need to keep using energy. So it's not right for you to penalize us with the same rules as you. But what everyone else is saying here is, along has come George Bush for his last G8 summit. And on arriving, he said, look, if we're going to do a deal on climate change, it has to sign out everyone, including India and China. Otherwise, the U.S. won't be there.
Is there something strategic or tactical in what George Bush is saying, trying to use China and India as a kind of climate change alliance so the U.S. doesn't feel so isolated? Certainly, George Bush rejecting the Kyoto protocols was viewed as an isolated industrial leader.
Well, there are different views on that. One is that the U.S. president just wants to kick off these commitments into the long grass, into the far future, so he doesn't need to sign up to anything right now, so that this won't squeeze the U.S. economy even more at a time of economic troubles. And he's probably not the only industrialized leader who thinks that way. There's a lot of worry among the lobbyists here that no one's really in the mood to squeeze their economy more, either to give up aid for the poor or to tighten their belts over energy. And that's one of the big problems this year. But there's another problem with George Bush, and that is this is his last G8 summit. And he's already what many people call a lame duck president. And you can kind of sense that. The Russian officials, for example, ahead of President Medvedev's meeting he had with George Bush earlier today, said he was going to take a very tough line, a very critical line with the US president. He can afford to be tough with him. He's not going to be around that much longer. Well, and the same thing with climate change. Why should China and India sign up when this U.S. president won't be there? And who knows what U.S. policy will be next year?
Well, certainly the Bush goodbye is one theme. The issue of Zimbabwe will come up, and there will be more discussions of climate change later on in the week. Bridget Kendall, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be with you.
Bridget Kendall, BBC diplomatic correspondent, reporting from Hokkaido, Japan.
Fascinating point that they spend as much time talking about poverty as they do about economic prosperity in the leading developing nations.